Well, welcome again, everyone, especially on this beautiful day. And you can see the theme of beautiful day, blue skies, sun out. It's very important to me, at least. So thank you for being here. And thank you to Sharon, as always, for your music, and to Bill upstairs, and Amy, and Jenna filling in for ushering, because Mike and Joyce could not be here today because of intestinal flu. So they decided it was not a good idea to come over to do that. So thank you, Jenna, for doing that for us. And of course, especially for all of you being here. Now, every year about this time, before the second week of February, I always remind us and myself too that St. Valentine's Day is coming up very quickly. This year it is on Tuesday. And I mention this every year just in case anyone has forgotten to get a card, gift, candy, a restaurant meal, or some other symbol of love for others in their lives. And my title today involves the L word. And when I was talking to Deborah yesterday, who's in Oregon, and is my life partner, she said, oh, love. And I said, well, that's one of the two. And she said, well, what's the other one? So I mentioned to her that, well, love is clearly associated with Valentine's Day. So it kind of speaks for itself. But that other L is liberal, or liberalism. It's also called, by those who are fervent against it, a bleeding heart liberal. So you can see the connection with heart, liberal, and love. Or more recently, libtard, which is a rather unkind word, as of scorn and disparagement. And the words saying that liberals basically are hopelessly naive, really not very pleasant people, and so on, has a long history in this country, going back to the Revolution, actually. But when Franklin Delano Roosevelt had proposed the idea, and this is an example, of Social Security, and some of us know what Social Security is intimately, he was accused of promoting socialism by his opponents. They believed that the best scenario in America was very limited government and minimum taxes, so that those who would get rich would get richer, and of course, as we all know, spill their wealth down into the middle class and the poorer people. He was later called both a socialist and a liberal, so he was getting both from both sides. Similar accusations arose when Medicare for senior citizens was introduced as part of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society Reform. Future President Ronald Reagan, and this was in about 1965 or so, said that the proposed Medicare legislation for healthcare for the older would mean, and I quote here, we are going to spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like to be in America when men were free. I can't even figure that one out. But regardless of that, he was firmly against socialism as having handouts, basically, to people who, in his case, they didn't deserve it. And we know that the word liberal is still said with scorn by many in this country. Opponents say that liberals apparently want to reduce people's freedom to make as much money as possible, and that has been a long-standing story in this country, want to create ever bigger governmental handouts for those who don't deserve it, and who want to create universal health care to destroy America's health system, which is the best in the world. Okay. Now, as we know, Unitarian Universalism is also called a liberal religion. We do not have a creedal statement, nor do we have any dogma, although that's always open to interpretation. Both Unitarians and Universalists have historically promoted the suffrage movement, the anti-slavery movement, the anti-war movement of the 60s, and many other causes that affirm and promote the equity of all people. After the Unitarians and Universalists merged in 1961, the work of racial justice continued to be a focus, although there were many incidents of Black people being excluded from the UUA in terms of leadership and even being recognized as equals. Unitarian Universalism of that era was largely white, male, upper middle class or above, and highly educated. We spoke mightily of liberal religion and its values. But in still the 1980s, though, the focus was on the words and not actions. The inclusion of women ministers during that time changed the professional clergy culture. And that is about the time that I had gone to seminary and was starting to actively work in this field. And I remember when I was living in New England in the early 90s, that New England male ministers, and it was most of them, would go to chapter meetings, you know, to have lunch and gossip and so on, and have boasting contests like, "My church steeple is larger than your church steeple," comments. And believe me, I remember them. My church didn't even have a steeple, so I kept quiet. Male ministers would initiate ministerial sexual misconduct without punishment or guilt, except perhaps a slap on the wrist. The women's movement changed much of that dysfunctional mindset. Women ministers condemned male ministerial misconduct, as well as the fraternity-style hazing that went on at ministerial retreats. It was really, in those days, an old boys' club. The women who were increasingly vocal about the injustices helped create what we know now as the Six Sources and Seven Principles. And they were voted into existence in the UUA, the General Assembly, the annual meeting, in 1984 and 1985. And for any of you who are saying, what on earth is he talking about with sources and principles, you can go to nearly the first page before the first hymn, and there they all are. Now, in some of the older ones, there are only, actually in this one particularly, there are only five sources, but they added one around earth-centered spirituality a bit later on. And those became really important touchstones for what we believed and what was important in our religious lives. Later on, the LGBTQIA+ community became more prominent and more involved and more embraced in the UUA in the 1990s and early 2000s. Many became clergy who promoted a liberalism of love with a capital L and inclusivity to make the seven principles real rather than just a bunch of fancy words people knew but didn't really work with. The six sources were mostly ignored until the 1990s and beyond, when some UU clergy focused on them as resources to nurture the meaning of the seven principles with every generation. And I will humbly note that I was one of those people. Now, I know I don't want to keep you all morning because there is a football game this afternoon and also Valentine's Day on Tuesday, and I do not want to get in the way of those important rituals. So I'm going to speak briefly about some recent UU history and how it will probably affect all of you here and all of our congregations, at least in this country, in coming years. Many of the lay people and UU clergy who are involved with a revolutionary movement in the Unitarian Universalist world call themselves Neo-Universalists, which I've always been intrigued by, and I'm not quite sure what that means. But I am going to talk more about it in two Sundays on February 26, which will be part two of what I'm saying this morning. because I'm not sure what they mean about being universalists. Traditionally, universalism believed that all would go to heaven, no one was punished to go to hell, and so there was universal salvation. The contemporary meaning of universalism probably means something quite different, and I want to explore that with you because I think universalism is an important part of our future story. But that's something that I'm not going to talk a lot about simply because football game, Valentine's Day, and so on. Is it universalism that these folks are talking about who have essentially taken over the Unitarian Universalist movement? Well, I think it may be true, but I think the devil is in the details. The Unitarian Universalist Association and the Professional Ministers Association, which is called for short the UUMA, had a more or less friendly takeover by this group of very passionate, intellectual, but emotionally powerful people of younger ministers, particularly in the last 20, 25 years. A takeover, and not necessarily a bad thing, because there was the story that Unitarian Universalism, prior to about 1995, was rather stodgy, didn't do very much except celebrate its past. And this group really wanted to refocus the UUA toward the future, and particularly towards Black liberation, people of minority communities, and so on. The UUA Board of Trustees has a number of those people on it now, and about a year and a half ago, the trustees began an institutional UUA-wide review of Article 2 of the UUA bylaws, and you can now roll your eyes because you may not know what that is. The UUA bylaws, Article 2, is the statement that contains our principles, seven principles, and our six sources. And what they wanted that commission to do was do a re-review of all of that, the sources and principles and beyond, and nothing was outside the pale of changing them if they felt it was the wisest decision for the future and not for the past. The commission has recently submitted its report to the UUA Board of Trustees. In the B&B this last week, I included a link to a video, which is their final report, which is I think it's a YouTube video. And it's about, I'd say, 30 minutes long. It is very detailed, and they've obviously taken a great deal of care to try to make it fair. The commission asked for guidance from many focus groups in the UUA, including some people here. I believe they have taken that guidance to remove some of the more enthusiastic language in their earlier draft. However, it's very likely that changes will happen. One recommendation will be that the six sources and seven principles, as we know them, will be removed in favor of a new way to visualize the understanding of what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist collectively and individually. You'll note an illustration on the front of your order of service. That is an image, a working image of their recommendations. I'm still trying to figure it out, so I don't want to give you any false information. So 2 weeks from now, that image will still be on the order of service, and we're going to look at it a little bit more deeply about what they mean by interdependence and so on. I think it's going to be different than what we understand today. Now, I am going to end here acknowledging that I have a continuing disagreement with part of their philosophy, I guess. You may or may not have seen the long acronym called ARAOMC, Anti-Racism, Anti-Oppression, Multicultural Community. And that is a model of social justice in the UUA for at least the last 15 to 20 years and probably beyond. I do agree, in principle, with the hoped for outcome of creating multicultural community or beloved community. I think that's very powerful. I do, however, believe that the methods to create such a beloved community are toxic, shaming, and shunning of those who disagree with the tough love approach to this movement that is really revolutionary. Now, every congregation, including you folks, will have voting power at the annual meeting, which is General Assembly, which this year will be in Pittsburgh. They will vote on the recommendations of the Board of Trustees and this commission. Majority vote says it passes. Non-majority vote, I think, would be a rather dramatic outcome. The following year, in 2024, that commission report will have to then be voted on again, and it will have to have a two-thirds vote. That will be very interesting, because I don't know if that's going to happen. But you folks here will have can have delegates to that General Assembly, either remotely or in person, and this church, like all of our congregations, will have votes to be able to say yay or nay, or maybe present. Because you have to remember, unlike a lot of churches, and I'll not mention any names, unlike a lot of churches, you are the future of a democratic, liberal, religious faith. We are not bound to past criteria. We're not bound to words that were said 1,000 years ago. We are constantly acknowledging that, as they say, revelation is not sealed. And you all are that future. And I hope that you will, next week or in a time to come, listen to that report by the commission, because I think it's going to be have a powerful influence on all of you here. As I said, you are the future. I'm not. Revolutions can be messy, and some will be left behind. I will be one of them. And that's okay. Change is bumpy at its best times. Will the UU world still embrace love with a capital L as a central theme? Well, I would certainly hope so. Will it be an easy process? I doubt it very seriously. I do believe, though, fiercely in the opening words that we spoke this morning. Beloved community is formed not by the eradication of difference, but by its affirmation, by each of us claiming identities and cultural legacies that shape who we are and how we live in the world. And I believe that applies to every one of us here, the people here in spirit, really our ancestors who were in this building, and many people beyond. Will they be true? Well, time will tell. We'll see. So in 2 Sundays, on the 27th, whatever it might be, part 2. Stay tuned. I would invite you, by the way, before we go to do the offertory, is think for a few minutes, a few moments. What does it mean? How important are the principles and sources to us? A lot of us has grown up around them. We've known them for, gosh, 40 years. What if they are to go away? What if there's something that is the different model of saying this is who and what we are? It's going to be dramatic, and there are going to be people who will say, no, I'm not letting go of those, and that's okay. But we have to think about what works for our future as opposed to our past. Let's just take a few moments to reflect on that, because I guarantee it'll be a question for us all.